I'm Richard Verberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 215 for the weekend starting 20 April 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, what's up with Google's messaging strategy?
Not much, it seems. Also this week, OpenServe bolsters fiber to 200 megs a second, more South Africans exposed in Facebook data scandal, and ZTE's fight with the US government. Also, we're going to be talking about a new image compression format from the guys who made JPEG.
Nice. It's Friday. That means, of course, it's time to talk all things tech.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. We are recording over the internet using appear.in again. I love this platform, by the way. It's very good.
Oh, fantastic. And it's so seamless. And just, yeah, there's no issues. It's like you just open the browser and it's there and it's working. There.
Just works. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So there's lots to talk about today. Shall we jump in, though, first of all, with our quiz? Do you want to do the first question?
Certainly. The first question in this week's quiz. According to Facebook, how many South Africans have now possibly been exposed to the data scandal involving Cambridge Analytica?
And we'll talk
numbers to the closest 10,000.
And we'll talk about that in the show. FNB this week launched a new mobile bank account aimed at the unbanked and underbanked. What is it called?
Third question. Google this week said it would stop active development of which smartphone messaging app after failing to achieve the desired number of downloads.
And tough new data protection rules are being introduced in the EU next month. Mark Zuckerberg knows all about those. What are the regulations called?
And the final question, SpaceX this week launched a new spacecraft for NASA that will search for extrasolar planets. What is the spacecraft called?
And luckily that was a successful launch by SpaceX, unlike the Facebook launch about 2 years ago. And I'm looking forward to seeing what that new spacecraft uncovers. It's quite powerful, apparently, and is going planet hunting, so looking forward to that. A reminder, if you're listening to the show live today, you can participate in the show. Send us a WhatsApp voice note on 071-999-1111. That's 071-999-1111. Send us a voice note. Tell us what you're thinking. Do you have a tech pick this week? And what do you think of what we're talking about today? We'd love to hear from you. And before we jump into the news, my office is currently surrounded by builders, so there may be some knocking and flying bricks occasionally, but hopefully it doesn't.
You're one of those flying bricks, don't you?
Yeah, no, indeed. I'll duck. But there may be a little bit of background noise in today's recording, so apologies about that. So, did you see the story on The Verge this morning, Richard, about Google's messaging platform, its new platform, its attempt to try and do something in the messaging space? It's effectively announced that it's stopping active development of Allo. Do you remember Allo? They launched about...
I remember. Never used it. Never kind of... I never got into it, and it just never appealed to me.
I think that's the case for most people. I certainly downloaded it and had a look at it and played with it for a week or two, and then forgot about it. And then, you know, a few months later, it's still installed on my phone, and then I uninstalled it, and I never used it again. That was their attempt to take on WhatsApp, and it was a complete failure.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about Hangouts other day, too. It really seems like Google has kind of lost its focus for what it's trying to do with. I mean, I thought Hangouts was one of my favorite platforms for a very long time, and now it's, like you've shown, it's spam-infested. And they need to look at that, because everybody's on Google, and it makes sense for them to have a really solid messaging app.
For sure. I ditched Hangouts a month ago now, and I don't miss it.
I don't have as many issues with it. But, yeah, I've seen a lot less people are using it now. I mean, there's only one or two people that I actually chat with on Hangouts.
The thing is, Google used to have a perfectly good messaging app called Google Chat.
Yes.
And it was great. It was very basic, very simple. There were apps available for PC. It worked fine on your phone. It was great for quick communication without any – and I think people liked it because it didn't have anything extraneous about it. It wasn't full of like Facebook Messenger, full of all sorts of stuff that you'd never want and will never use. And it was a small, lightweight client. And then they ditched that for Hangouts. And Hangouts became a plug-in for the Chrome web browser rather than a native app on Windows and Mac. And I didn't like that, but I persisted with it. I carried on using it because I still had quite a lot of people who used the platform or the old Google Chat who migrated across to Hangouts. Yeah. But I've seen that number slowly dwindling. And while there's still a chat functionality built into Gmail, I don't hardly get any messages on there anymore unless they're from spammers.
Yeah, fortunately, I don't have a spam issue. But like I said, yeah, unless somebody's on Gmail and you know the other, because nobody, I don't know anybody who's got the app installed. So unless they've logged into Gmail, you know, I'm not going to be able to chat with them because they just moved off that platform. In fact, I find a lot more people using Facebook Messenger these days.
Oh, do you? Okay.
People on Facebook, which is weird. Like they're just dropping messages on there as a normal text platform, which is, I guess, it's interesting and because, or it's good because everybody is on Facebook already.
Yes.
Or everybody that I know, so it makes sense. But yeah, it's not in lieu of Google's amazing chat function that we had a few years ago.
Yeah. So now they're coming back with a new platform, and according to The Verge, which broke the story. They're working with operators around the world as on a replacement to SMS. So in other words, they want this new app to in effect be a replacement for SMS. There won't be any SMS charges unless the operator decides to impose charges, which I don't think is going to fly. And so they're having another go. It's integrated in sort of an operator level. But according to The Verge, there won't be any encryption in it. Which
pointless, I think, today's age.
Yeah, without encryption, are you really going to want to use it as your default messaging app?
No, I
don't think so. I mean,
then why would you want to move away from SMS? Because that's the whole point. SMS is open and unencrypted and expensive.
Yes.
Where data, digital or data-based message with an encrypted-based system, like WhatsApp, I mean, that's why they are so powerful with their desktop app. I mean, that's another one I use a lot more than I use Google Hangouts.
I do most of my communication on WhatsApp now, and a lot of it I do at a desktop because the app works. I mean, it's very basic, but it works.
And everybody's got it installed. I think that's also the key thing. With Google Chat back in the day, a lot of people had access to it and a lot of people use it because it was one of the first cross-platform chat apps.
Yes.
At the time.
And
but now with WhatsApp, now that everybody's got WhatsApp installed, it really is, because everybody's got it installed, it's the best default chat app.
It's the network effect. If everyone uses it, then you have to use it. And you're right, that used to be, and it's changed over the years. I mean, I used to use an app back in the 90s called ICQ. I don't know if you remember ICQ. ICQ was great. I can't remember who developed it. It could have been America Online, or America Online might have bought them at some point. And then it slowly faded away. I don't remember why. I think Google Chat may have killed it.
Yeah, that was also very much tied into the IRC kind of chat functionality. Or was that? That was a peer-to-peer chat system. It wasn't a group-based.
It was a desktop instant messaging platform. I don't know if it ever went to mobile, but this was before the days of smartphones. So ICQ was an app that you ran. It was available for Windows, I think for Linux and probably Mac as well. And everyone I knew back then who was using PCs, connected PCs, it was the WhatsApp back in the 1990s, certainly in the South African market.
Yeah. And there was a surprisingly small amount of chat apps around that time too. I mean, that's obviously why they became so popular.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember there was a South African version of that also launched called QQ. I think it was developed in China or something. But
QQ, yeah, that's a Chinese app. That's Tencent, same people who own WeChat.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Good times. I can't say I miss those, but...
but Google, I don't know. I mean... Now that chat has, I mean, back then it was a PC-based thing, and now WhatsApp has come to dominate on mobile, is there an opportunity for Google to unseat Facebook/WhatsApp in mobile instant messaging, or has that horse already bolted? Is WhatsApp going to be the dominant platform going forward?
I think there's always an opportunity for disruption. I mean, there's always an opportunity for a new company to develop something that everybody goes, wow, I want this, and it becomes a trend, and it either stays there or it kind of fades away. But the thing is, and why WhatsApp has gotten away with it up till now, because the reason why they got on all the phones is because of their cross-platform capabilities. You know, it doesn't matter if you're Android or iPhone, you're going to have WhatsApp.
Yes.
I think Google's got a more difficult time, or it's going to have a more difficult time in getting it on all platforms, simply because they are, you know, the Google, the Android, that is their main platform. So from an Android point of view, certainly no problem. All their phones could have a messaging app of theirs. But you're going to have a harder time to convince other phone users, like the iPhone or iPhone users, to install another app to chat with.
Yeah, certainly. I think that you're right, that Android dominance in the smartphone market is their strongest play here. And the fact that something like 82 or 85% of all smartphones in the world are running Android puts them in a very strong position to be able to force something onto consumers. But do consumers want to have something forced onto them? WhatsApp was never forced onto consumers. Everyone voluntarily downloaded it.
It was such a demand because it was cross-platform again. You could chat to anybody on any platform, on any device.
Mm.
That was the appeal.
Yeah. So I'm not convinced about this new attempt to come into the space. They really have made a mess of their instant messaging space, haven't they? It was theirs to own, if you think about it, back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s. Google Chat was predominant. And it slipped, and I think they made a bad mistake with Hangouts. We've done some experimentation with Hangouts video on YouTube, and that aspect of it is excellent. But as a chat app, I also don't know if it's secure as WhatsApp and Signal and Telegram.
Yeah. Maybe that's a thing too. You know, we don't always want to consolidate our tech. We don't always want a all-in-one platform that does everything in one app.
Mm.
If you want a really strong, and this is what WhatsApp did right. They did one thing very well, and that's let people communicate via text using data, not SMS.
Mm.
Functions of encryption stuff that came later was an evolution of that. And if Google kept it separately, I'm sure they would have had a much stronger following or would have grown that following because people knew what they were getting into. It's a single app that does one thing very well.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah. So I'm just having a look at my smartphone here to see what messaging apps I have installed. Obviously, I have the SMS app that comes with Android. Mm-hmm. I'm using WhatsApp, of course, Telegram, mm-hmm. Facebook Messenger Lite, Signal, and Skype. Which ones do you have on your phone, Rachot?
I have all of those. Telegram is probably the newest one that I've started using most recently. It's really WhatsApp, and I don't actually use Apple's Message anymore.
iMessage.
I use it very rarely. WhatsApp is the predominant app in my life right now, the communication app.
That's because iMessage is not cross-platform, right? You can't if you're using iMessage, you can't talk to someone on Android.
I mean, that's also why Facebook made the clever move, in my opinion, to move their messaging app separately. Obviously, it was a bit controversial at the time because people didn't want to have another, you know, it almost went in reverse for them. They extracted the messaging app from their Facebook platform because they wanted to achieve the same thing, I think. You know, it's having something that you can run essentially as a standalone, although we know Facebook isn't really a standalone kind of world. That's why I find a lot more people, that's why a lot of more people are talking to me on Messenger, I think, because it's become that alternative platform, especially for the Facebook community.
Yes. By the way, pro tip, I know you've recently moved to Android. Don't use the full Messenger app. Use the Lite version. It's much better.
The Lite version, yes. I did install that, and it is running beautifully.
Yeah, much smaller, much faster, without all the extraneous crap that you don't want.
Facebook, we do love you for those things.
But I do think that Google has a major task ahead of it if it wants to get back into the space, because it's very clear that Google Allo, which is also a terrible name, has been a complete failure.
Yeah. And they've got the user base. I mean, they shouldn't have such a difficult time to get a really good messaging app out there.
Yeah.
It's a very simple concept. Connect two devices or maybe more and let them chat to each other.
Yeah. I think another problem Google has is that it's getting a reputation for launching things and then pulling the plug on them. And I think consumers are starting to think, well, actually, why should I start using a Google product? Because there's a good chance that Google is just simply going to pull the plug on it if it doesn't reach a critical mass. And they've done it so many times with so many products now.
And a few really good ones that I can't even remember the name, but there was a few very early on when they started experimenting with their beta labs and those things that they can.
Yeah. I mean, they even canned a social network. Remember Orkut?
Oh, yeah.
Google Orkut. I remember getting on that at one stage. It was huge in Brazil, And it never took off, really took off elsewhere in the world. And that was their attempt, their first attempt to take on Facebook. That didn't work out. So what did they do? They pulled the plug on it. They then launched Google Plus, which is kind of limping along, not really going anywhere. I'm not sure Google knows what to do with Google Plus, actually.
Thing. I mean, it's just it seems like it's just it's kind of an addendum now.
It does, yeah. I mean, we as Tech Central post our stories on Google Plus, but
That's obviously good for search engines too, because they will prioritize, they will give preference to their own platform. So
that's my thinking. We should probably still keep posting there because it's Google, right? And if we're putting our stuff on Google Plus, maybe it's getting a priority in the search engine, but I don't know.
I'm sure it'll help. I'm sure it'll certainly assist with that ranking.
Yeah.
But I don't have their fingers as deep into the other social media platforms. They just don't have access to it.
But beyond posting stuff on Google Plus, I don't use it at all.
Yeah, no, neither do I. It's just a Google search engine, really.
Yeah. What social networks do you use? I mean, I'm on Facebook and Twitter. I think that's about it, really.
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Oh, of course, Instagram, which I don't use as much as I used to.
Yeah, but social media, I've always been a bit of a voyeur. You know, I'm not one of those guys that post thousands of things every month. My post count is usually pretty low, with the kind of work that I do, I use it for research. I use it to see what's the trends. I see what other people are doing. For Instagram, it's obviously nice to kind of just see visual photographs of people, what they take, where they go. But we are certainly getting to a point where I think less is more. For the last decade or so, we've been bombarded with new tech and really cool apps and the app generation to begin with. You know, everything kind of just changed from there.
Yeah.
We are getting to a point where I think we are getting a bit fatigued with everything that they've thrown at us, and we are wanting a little bit less. You know, give us the same functionality, but don't give me 200 things, 200 apps or 200 various versions of something. Make it simple and easy.
So, 071-999-1111. Send us a WhatsApp voice note and tell us what you think of Google's chances in the chat messaging space. Have they left it too late? Can they redeem themselves? Or has Facebook won the war? Certainly looks like Facebook's won the war to me.
Oh, yeah. And Google, I think Google also suffers from the thing where they are so big and there's so many projects and programs and things running in that company. It's inevitable that they're not going to be able to focus on everything. And they are going to be trying a lot of things. Maybe we're just seeing a higher failure rate because they are producing so many new things. And some things are going to stick and some things aren't.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, at the expense of us putting in our time to kind of get to know these apps and wanting to use them or not.
But with that sort of strategy, though, you end up as a consumer feeling like a bit of a lab rat. And you start using a product, and then the next thing you know, Google says, actually, we're not going to develop this anymore. And you kind of feel, hard done by. And it's, okay, well, then I won't use your next app that you come up with because we might just pull the plug on that too.
Yeah, or wait and see if it has a critical uptake. I guess the only reason for me to really want to experiment with anything new that's coming out is firstly to reserve my username. And secondly, just to kind of see what the hype is about. As early adopters, that's what we do. I guess if we don't have as much, we'll also be saying, where's all the new innovation? I think there's a balance. But with Google, we've just seen a track record of they develop and close, develop and close.
Yeah.
They throw it open. They make it open source or something. And I don't know. I guess there's probably more longevity that we want to see out of these things.
Yeah, we'll be watching this new Google messaging platform with some interest. I wonder if the local operators have been part of the discussions with Google. Interesting to find out.
Look, if anybody's going to get it right, it'll be Google, right?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. They don't exactly have a great track record of success.
Yeah, you're right. We were just speaking about it.
So, OpenServe, 200 megabit per second fiber. Are we excited?
I want to be, and yes, I am, but I guess sadly, because we have fiber now and incremental speeds like that isn't really a bigger appeal as what it used to be. I mean, it's nice to have, but it's not the benefit you get from 100 to a 200 megabit per second line. I mean, the benefit from a 200 megabit to a gigabit, I still can't really recommend that full gigabit because, yes, it's fantastic, but for the amount of money you're paying and the throughput you actually get at the end of the day and the kind of stuff you can download, it's negligible, I guess.
Says the man with a 1 gigabit per second connection.
Only for a few more days. It's $5.50 at the end of the month.
I think going back down is going to be much more noticeable than stepping up, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. But again, that's why I'm saying I've been thinking about the last few days when I was playing with the fiber, and nothing that I'm doing on a day-to-day kind of journey is requiring anything more than 100 meg or 50 meg fiber.
Yeah, yeah.
I can wait 5 minutes for a big installer file to download if it's a gig file, or 10 minutes, you know, because fiber is that quick. The difference between a 5 minute and a 2 minute, you can argue, is, you know, a download is again negligible if depending on what you want and how many people you have in your network.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic to have the option. I mean, 200 meg, again, as services increase, as service speeds increase around the world and locally, every step is going to help.
Mm.
And I'm not going to complain about that because we've been yearning for this kind of fiber for so long.
It does seem a bit me too, though, after Vumatel launched 200 meg fiber last year. I think it was in August or somewhere around there. And I'm on a 200 meg connection now. Must say I quite like it.
The difference between that and 100 meg, do you really see, you know, on an ongoing day-to-day basis, does it really affect you?
No, not really on the downloads, but on the uploads, and I dump a lot of stuff in the cloud, it's actually quite a bit faster, and I like that. I mean, when we finish recording the show, I will dump the show onto Google Drive, and it'll upload in about two seconds.
Quicker than transferring it via USB.
Oh, much quicker. Which is a remarkable.
You also have a 200 meg up as well there.
I have 200 meg up and 200 meg down in my office, yes.
Interesting. Yeah, the Cell C 1 gigabit is only got a 1 gigabit package, only has 100 meg up.
Yeah, and this new OpenServe plan is also 100 meg up and 200 meg down. They've got a weird decision at Telkom where the upload speed would be exactly half the download speed. I'm not sure what the reasoning behind that was. I prefer a symmetrical connection, I must say.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Mm.
The pricing on this on this new 200 meg OpenServe product is also not very good. I was looking at comparing it on Cool Ideas, which is an ISP based here in Johannesburg, and their Vumatel 200 meg symmetrical plan is around 1500 rand a month versus and that's for uncapped, unshaped broadband. And the equivalent plan on OpenServe with 200 down and 100 up is 2,500 rand, so 1,000 rand a month more. So it would suggest that OpenServe's pricing is a bit out of kilter with the competition as well. So I can't see a huge take up for these services.
Yeah,
not at 2,500 rand a month. It's very expensive.
No, exactly.
Mm.
Unless they're targeting businesses, but again, it doesn't make sense. They're still more expensive.
They are targeting businesses, but you're right. Yeah, I mean, they are targeting businesses as well, and maybe that's what they're going for here. But it's being pitched as a home product. Certainly, Cool Ideas has it advertised on their website as a home product. So I do think open source pricing is a bit out of kilter with the rest of the market, with the other fiber providers. Perhaps we shouldn't be too surprised given this is Telkom, but. But I think there needs to be some downward price adjustments in Telkom Fiber. Just looking at the price comparisons between Vumatel and some of the other fiber providers and OpenServe.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, we're in a good position where we can look at these and still choose. You know, it's fantastic to be able to choose your provider based on the pricing. You know, you can change if they were cheaper. Quick decision, just to change and do it. You know, and that's the benefit or the beauty of having this beautiful fiber.
Yeah. Unless you only have OpenServe fiber, in which case you're stuck with that. There isn't a huge amount of duplication of fiber. I don't know too many homes that have both OpenServe and Vumatel, for example. I'm sure those homes exist, but I think you find it in a lot of cases. Like I had it at my home. I live in a housing complex, and the first provider that came was Vumatel, and it was installed. OpenServe came along a month later, and the body corporate said, not a chance of you digging this place up again.
Yeah, exactly. But you also had the better option. I mean, you know, you want to go with the provider that's going to give you that kind of open-ended.
For now, Vuma is the better option. Who knows in future? I mean, Telkom might say, well, we're going to cut fiber prices by 70%, and then suddenly they're the most attractive in the market.
But they're probably not likely to happen anytime soon, let's be honest.
No, probably not. I was very much in favor of them digging up again, because then there'd be two infrastructure providers, and OpenServe was willing to do it.
Yeah.
And So I was all for it, but unfortunately my neighbors were not of the same view.
They didn't see the same benefits as you do.
They'd just been through a month of driveways being dug up and all the rest of it. So the prospect, I think, of them being dug up all over again, just yeah. So another fiber provider come in wasn't that great. Unfortunately, because I would have preferred an infrastructure competition, given that there were two providers yeah. willing to do it. I think OpenServe was crazy to want to do it. Because
well, it doesn't make sense why you'd want to replicate in an existing. I mean, yes, it makes business sense if you can afford it and you can install it and let that layout sit there, that capital outlay sit there. But I would. There must be a better way for housing estates to do this, whether they install their own fiber internally and then just have it hooked up on the outside of the property to whichever fiber provider they want. That also seems like a kind of a better option. You own the infrastructure.
Yes.
We're going to pay for that, you know.
I think some places have done that actually, and it does make sense to do that because it puts you as the consumer in a much stronger position. Now that in my housing complex we've got only Vumatel, obviously Telkom can't put a box at the gate and connect to the Vuma fiber because it's Vuma's property, so that's not going to happen. But it's early days in this whole thing. No doubt regulations are going to come down the line telling these operators what they can and can't do, etc. But it's still exciting times, and the rollout of fiber is still continuing apace. There's no sign of any slowdown. So, and a lot of people are still not connected to fiber, so there's a lot of work still to do.
Well, there's a massive industry still, and I get so excited speaking to people that are not on fiber, and if I look at the amount of people I've managed to convert, and I do it because I've got so much passion for the technology that we have available, and everybody's raved about it, because it changes your life.
It does. I can't imagine. I've been on fiber now for about 18 months. I cannot imagine going back to ADSL. I think I'd go mad. I'd have to move house.
Yeah, I've been looking for places for. I'm moving soon again, and the first thing I look at is there fiber in that house? If it's not, I move on, no matter what price or where the house is. Yeah. Fiber is the thing that you want. Fortunately, every place with in the areas that I'm looking. All connected, and that's why I'm making it.
Yes. So. Absolutely. If I was house hunting at the moment as well, it would be top of my list. Has it got fiber? Sorry, no, not interested. Not interested. Doesn't matter how good the price is, how wonderful the house is. I'm not getting it if there's no fiber.
Yeah. I'm not waiting for fiber again. That's for sure.
For sure, yeah. Just remember back to those days of waiting and hearing that the service provider was coming to your neighborhood and getting excited. And imagine having to go all the way back to ADSL and starting to wonder again, when might a fiber provider be coming to me? Oh, horrible.
I think I'd rather quit the internet than wait again.
Anyway. For our podcast listeners, we need to take a quick ad break. For our live listeners, we will be back right now.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BitCo.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Rechat?
How's it, Duncan?
So, probably not a huge amount to say on this subject, but Facebook put out another statement this week saying that more South Africans than they had originally disclosed had been affected or potentially affected by the Cambridge Analytica situation. The new figure is an amount of 96,121, which is up from just under 60,000 previously. I think it was 59,777, if I recall correctly. So, a jump of, if my math is correct, around 45,000. No, 35,000. And they also reduced the number of people who actually installed the offending app. It was developed by their professor, Alexander, someone or other, who gave his data to Cambridge Analytica. That number was reduced from 33 to just 13 South Africans who actually directly installed the app, which mined their data and their friends' data and then handed over to Cambridge Analytica. But the number of exposed South Africans, and that's obviously South Africans who were friends with people overseas who installed the app, is now higher. Mm. We've spoken about this story extensively. I'm not sure there's much more else to say on it. We've got the GDPR, or the General Data Protection Regulation, coming into effect in Europe next month, and that's not only going to affect Europe, it's going to affect anyone who trades with Europe or deals in Europeans' data. And it's going to have a direct bearing on Facebook. Facebook has promised that they're going to implement and comply with GDPR, which are pretty tough regulations on data protection in the EU. And it has promised that it's going to roll out those same protections worldwide at an unspecified future date. There was a report this morning, I think it could have been on The Verge as well, saying that Facebook has, however, indicated that everyone else in the world is going to be currently subject to Irish rules, which obviously fall under the EU. So GDPR will affect Facebook Ireland, which looks after the rules and regulations that Facebook has to comply with worldwide. There was a suggestion in this article that they're in fact going to be moving that jurisdiction to the US. So the rest of the world outside the EU will fall under the US regulations, which are significantly weaker than the EU regulations. So make a
solution. It seems like it's just delaying another situation.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's I think it was a Bloomberg story, actually. We ran it on Tech Central. They made the point that Facebook must be very concerned about this GDPR. It's very tough regulations. They can be fined, I think, 4% of their global annual turnover for not complying. So that's billions of dollars per infraction. So they must be hugely concerned about it. So according to this Bloomberg story, we are going to now be subject here in South Africa to the US rules. The information regulator, which is the new data protection regulator, which has been created in South Africa and headed up by Panzi Tlakula, who used to be at the Independent Electoral Commission, wrote to Facebook, and they responded in a letter in which they disclosed these new numbers. They didn't say a huge amount that was new, just pointing to basically to Facebook's press releases on the issue and Mark Zuckerberg's blog posts. But the information regulator, I'm not sure how much it can really do in this instance, and how toothless it, or how many teeth it may actually have to be able to enforce anything. But there we go. 96,000 South Africans potentially affected. I wouldn't worry about it too much if you're one of them, really.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I'm glad that we're having these conversations about data and data privacy.
For sure.
Incredibly important. And I don't think many people have, it's not a secret that most people don't understand this. And with the conversation around Mark Zuckerberg and the senators themselves, not really, the questions they've asked showed how much even they didn't really understand a lot of things about Facebook. If we can just keep up this momentum, have the conversation, but Facebook also obviously needs to jack itself up and make sure, because it's the only one that can really, I guess, prove to the internet-based community that this kind of thing can be done legitimately with protecting the user's data. And there's still a way to make money off the platform by doing ads and all those things.
Hmm.
But it's just, you know, making a secure system to not let this kind of info leak.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. It's very good that we're having these conversations now, because these companies have been vacuuming up our data and sensitive data, our location data, all sorts of information. It's time where there was a conversation about what's ethical and just how much of this information should be kept private.
Also, make it transparent and make it obvious what I'm signing into. I actually don't mind if Facebook and Google track me and I can look at all that data, because I also find it valuable in my own life. And obviously, I want it to be anonymized if they do use it for data and tracking like they do with Google Maps.
Mm.
But I would sign into that if give me an opt-in, and I would do it because I see value to some of those features and services in my own life. And I'm not too precious about the kind of information that gets put out as a result of it if I opt in and I know that I'm a part of it. because it'll allow me to opt out as well the day that I do choose to do that.
Yeah. I asked a question on Twitter about a week ago. You know, Twitter has those little polls. I find them quite useful sometimes.
Yeah.
And I asked, would you be prepared to pay for an ad-free version of Facebook that doesn't track your data and sell it to advertisers? I'm one of the people who would. I would be prepared to pay, say, $20-$30 a month to have an ad-free Facebook. 80% of people who responded to that poll, and it was quite a large number. I think it was a couple of hundred respondents. 80% said they are not prepared to pay a cent.
That's interesting.
Hmm.
So they obviously the value they see out of Facebook kind of outweighs the potential.
In other words, they're prepared to have their data mined and sold to advertisers. In other words, in order to have a free Facebook experience.
Look, I certainly don't mind. Given the option, I would probably choose to pay for that as well, to have a cleaner experience. Probably more relevant for me is paying for YouTube not to have those ads, because it's irritating having to listen to music and videos and those ads pop up. So again, there's another place where paying for a service would mean a lot. But yeah, I guess people just want access to Facebook, not have to pay for us, I think.
Yeah. My guess is they will introduce a paid tier as an experiment. I'd sign up. I'd do it. As long as it's reasonably priced. I think 100 rand a month would be too expensive, but maybe 20, 30 bucks a month is reasonable.
Yeah, it needs to be under 50 bucks. If you're starting to spend thousands of rands just to have access to ad-free social media, it's not really worth it.
Yeah, and it's not like they're not making the sort of investments that Netflix makes, for example, in content, original content creation. I mean, this is a social network. The content on there is user-generated. Sure, they've got big expenses and server farms and all the rest of it, but the cost per user won't be as high as it would be with Netflix.
Exactly. I mean, if I look at it from the other side, I mean, when I do use Facebook advertising, and it's an incredible platform if you look at what you can do on it and really target the person that is right for your business. But you essentially spend a rand, maybe less, on targeting a person. I mean, you can probably get up to a place where you spend cents per ad on people. So if I can see that value and say, okay, cool, I'm happy to spend 5 or 10 rand just to those ads that target me, just to get rid of them. That's also a way, I guess, to calculate what that cost would be. It's certainly not 50 rand a go. It's certainly not 20 rand a click. It's a lot less than that.
Yeah. I think your ad-free YouTube might be coming in the not-too-distant future. I remember a couple of months ago, the CEO of YouTube, I've forgotten her name, made some remarks at a conference somewhere saying that YouTube Red, is it called?
Yeah.
The subscription service is going to be rolled out worldwide. I would expect to see that in South Africa this year.
Fantastic. I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah. I'd also pay to get rid of the ads on YouTube. I mean, it's so irritating. You're watching a really great video, and next thing you've got to forced to watch a 30-second ad in the middle of it.
And they've ramped it up severely now. I mean, even the music videos, because I'm a big fan of music videos, and I have massive playlists on YouTube that I often listen to and enjoy. But they've become very sneaky, where they used to have ads only in the beginning of the end, but now they've got ads bang in the middle of a song or at the break, just before the chorus.
That's irritating.
Not nice. Yeah. And I've started listening a lot, watching a lot less YouTube music videos as a result of it. But yeah, the algorithm and what YouTube is doing, that's probably a topic for an entire episode in its own.
All right. Moving swiftly along, ZTE versus the US. This is an interesting one. The US, I think it was the Commerce Department, effectively blocking ZTE from using any American technology in its products for a period of 7 years. It seems to be an extension of this trade war that's escalating between China and the US. But in effect, it means ZTE, which obviously is a reasonably sized smartphone manufacturer, they make plenty of other products as well, can't use Qualcomm processors, for example. They can't. They might not be able to source Android in future. That's a huge problem. I mean, the US has basically cut these guys off at the knees.
Oh, where does it stop? I mean, again, we're talking about Huawei having difficulty in the US now. It's not a good sign for tech companies based in China.
Yeah. I wonder if it'll backfire on the US, though. I mean, is it going to force these Chinese companies maybe to collaborate to build their own alternative operating system for smart devices?
Possibility, I guess. They'll probably have to if they are blocked from using this operating system.
Mm. I don't know if ZTE has the resources on its own to build an OS. I mean, Android is so popular because of it's such a well-developed platform. It's got the ecosystem. It's got all the apps. It puts them in a very difficult position. I see ZTE this morning was saying that they find this objectionable and that they're going to take this on legal review. Not surprising. Yeah. The share price tanked. But it's getting ugly out there. I mean, America is really starting to play ugly with Chinese tech companies.
And once that fight goes the other way, I mean, I would argue that when it comes to the tech, China's holding all the cards. You know, if you break that connection in terms of the tech side from China to the US, the US will probably suffer more.
Yeah, probably. I mean, if China really wanted to play hardball, they could just say, well, sorry, America, we're not going to supply you with any technology anymore.
Yeah.
Then there's no more iPhones. There's no more anything.
Yeah, that's why I don't understand why they're playing a game like this. There's certainly much better ways of diplomatically, you know, figuring these things out between two nations. I mean, unfortunately, it's going to impact everybody, all the rest of us.
Yeah, it's ugly nationalism led by Donald Trump, I'm afraid. I think that's what it boils down to at the end of the day. Just taking a quick photo of the screen. It looks quite cool doing this in a theater. Smile, Rehart. I was going to say that's the news this week, but it's actually not all the news this week. Rehart, you wanted to chat about the JPEG file format. Apparently there's a new version coming out that's better compression.
I came across this week, and it was pretty interesting as a photographer and videographer. The JPEG.org organization has announced a new version of JPEG called JPEG XS that they are still pushing through to all the regulatory processes and things. But the JPEG XS format was designed and built specifically for professional movie editing, photography, and virtual reality, augmented reality drones. So what they're trying to do with this format is create something that's going to give you much better compression, retain the image quality, whether it is from a drone or a VR camera, and being able to then obviously quickly share it over the internet. I mean, smaller file sizes transfer quicker with the same kind of quality without any compression loss. Mm-hmm. So from that point of view, I think it's going to be pretty impressive. We don't have any data in terms of real compression and what the actual platform can do. It's still pretty early stages, but you can go read more about it on jpeg.org/JPEG XS. I've got some technical information about the format there. But if we're considering, you know, even with self-driving cars, you know, they take thousands of images a second, calculated. Sometimes they upload those if they need to analyze them. So there's definitely a need for, you know, us to be able to have images that are much smaller to transfer it quicker. Mm. Having more bandwidth doesn't really solve the problem. You need to be able to get it over quicker in a physical file size format. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited to see more about this. Probably going to be a while still before this becomes a standard. But yeah, it's well worth keeping an eye on.
And rolled out. You need support in the operating system and everything else, camera makers. I mean, it's a long-term process, right?
Sure. But look, I mean, it should be relatively easy to roll out because it'll just be an algorithm. So, you know, all these hardware manufacturers just need to include this in their software. You know, it's just an encryptor.
Yeah.
Another benefit to this is, and one thing that they're punting is power consumption. Apparently, this format will require a lot less power to create. So obviously the algorithm won't chew as much power from a device to compress a file or to create the file, which obviously means, you know, it talks about how they want to move to a place where creating this data and transferring data doesn't really have any overhead on your machine or your device.
Cool. I'll go and check that out. That's the news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week is Tim Wyatt-Gunning, the CEO of Web Africa. I'm sure you saw the story this week about the Advertising Standards Authority banning some of their ads on radio and billboards. There was a billboard outside a school in Cape Town, Trafalgar High School. And there were two complaints that were lodged with the ASA over the phraseology, the phrase used in Web Africa's advertising, which is effing fast internet. If you want to have a laugh, go and read the ASA ruling on the website. Just be warned, it contains very strong language. I thought it was hugely amusing. No matter where you stand in this debate, I've seen views expressing support for the Advertising Standards Authority in saying that children need to be protected from seeing the word effing on billboards, to people saying this is ridiculous, this is a dinosaur of an organization, shouldn't exist, and you know, why are these Mother Grundys complaining? So, but wherever you stand in the debate, there's no doubt that Web Africa has come out on top here because they've got a huge amount of publicity out of this.
But, you know, if there's one thing I've learned in the advertising industry is, you know, you have to push the boundaries. Mm-hmm. And when you get to a point like this and you can produce an ad that gets people talking like this, that's when you know you've hit it with gold.
Yeah. I mean, anything worse than people talking about you is people not talking about you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And they certainly managed to get people talking about this. And I understand that Web Africa has got some has some clever responses coming down the line in the form of future advertising, which I believe is going to be quite amusing. I had a sneak preview of some of it yesterday. Watch out for it. Don't want to give away too much. And then our loser this week is IBM for putting out disappointing results. IBM really used to, I mean, they used to dominate the IT industry. They were the IT industry back in the 1960s and 70s. And they really have fallen a long way. And poor results this week, missing analysts' forecasts, and their market capitalization has sunk further. And Netflix is now worth more than IBM. Video streaming company that entertains us in our living rooms is now worth more than the company that used to utterly dominate the IT sector.
I really hope IBM doesn't become, I don't think they will, but they shouldn't become, or I hope they don't become a Polaroid case study.
I don't think so. I don't think so, but they are struggling. They are struggling to make themselves relevant in the new world.
Look, obviously, they are still massive in the corporate side.
They're huge.
You're not seeing any, I guess, kind of tech from them. This kind of stuff that everybody wants to see, and that, I guess, holds a sense on a company, making sure that we look at this company saying these guys are ahead of the curve.
They're a very big old school company. They're going to plod along. They're not going to go away. But you know, they're not the sexy, fast growing businesses like Apple and Amazon and Google, etc. They're a bit sort of belong to the old world in
many
respects.
They still wear suits. They still suits. Yeah, they still old school business people.
Yeah, for sure. And nothing wrong with that. You can make good money out of it. But the stock market hasn't responded very well to the latest set of numbers. Rechot, what's your pick this week?
So as I hinted in last week's podcast, I've been playing with this one-of-a-kind first in South Africa MSI note called the MSI GS65 Stealth Thin 8RF, which is quite a mouthful. You can just call it the GS65. But what I really like about this notebook, and in comparison to the other one I've tested a week before, which was a much bigger HP Omen notebook, this thing is smaller than my MacBook Pro 15-inch, and it's got more power under the hood, which is absolutely incredible. One of the things that stand out for me is the IPS display, which is able to run at 144 hertz, and the blacks are incredibly deep. The picture quality is fantastic. So I've been very impressed from the screen side of things.
Did you say 144 hertz refresh?
Yes, that's it.
I haven't played with a monitor with refresh that high. What does it look like? What does it feel like?
Beautiful. Smooth battery. It is, yeah. I mean, if I was playing side by side, so I was testing PUBG and Battlefield because those are my two favorite games. And comparing it to my other Samsung HP, my LG HP IPS display that I've got, it's also very high in display. It's massive difference in terms of just what you experience when you see it and kind of how it just tickles your eyes, if I can put it like that. It is really beautiful. Like I said, there's deep blacks on the screen too. I mean, they must have spent quite a bit of R&D to get the screen in this very small form factor. The bezels are quite small. I'm just going to hold it up to the screen as you can see, Duncan. But, I mean, look at that.
You can
barely see the bezels. And I'll just switch it on. Now, the other thing that I really like about this is the keyboard. It's a SteelSeries keyboard, so you can see the RGB lights coming up there.
Full mechanical keyboard.
It's not a mechanical keyboard. Oh. The keys are very similar to the MacBook keyboard, and that's why I like it. I can appreciate mechanical keys, but I'm not desperate to get a mechanical keyboard. For me, it's not really a thing. I've got a much nicer gaming mouse that really helps me with my gaming. But the thing that really sets this notebook apart from most other notebooks is the GeForce 1070 graphics card, which is a really good performing graphics card for a notebook. On a desktop machine, it's kind of a mid-range card, but you're not going to get anything better in a desktop machine. Now, considering, you know how big a GTX 1080 is or 1070 is?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how they shoehorned it into that small frame.
Exactly. I mean, this notebook is literally the same size, give or take a few millimeters, as my MacBook, and they've put that processing power in there. It is absolutely incredible. Now, you'll see the vents on the side. They do get hot. This thing, when it's running at full power, blows out a lot of hot air, but that is to be expected.
But like Parliament.
Sorry, a bit like?
Parliament.
Yeah.
We're running at full power, lots of hot air.
But at least this thing is more enjoyable to watch.
How many? It looks like lots of ports on that thing as well.
Yeah, there's all the ports you need. Lots of USB 3, two display ports, Thunderbolt. What was that? Anyway. I'll get that information now. And obviously the 3.5mm audio jacks. It's got everything you need from a gaming notebook. You can still plug in your external peripherals if you need a bigger monitor or a specific keyboard. But for the last time I was, if I look back 10 years when I was really invested in getting a high-end gaming notebook back in the day, there wasn't really any option. There wasn't anything that looked good on a corporate desk if you needed high processing performance. Or then if you want to play a game. And this thing really bridges the gap for me. This is the kind of thing that anybody can take into an office. Video editing, 3D design, because it's got desktop specs, there's nothing you can't do in it. And that is what's really appealing to me, the small form factor. And it's going for about $40,000, so it's not a cheap notebook. But if it's power you're after, then certainly worth checking.
$40,000 is not bad if you consider that a high-end Ultrabook is going to set you back about the same price, and it's got much lesser specs in it.
Exactly. And for the first time in about a decade, I'm looking at going away from a MacBook, looking at moving away from my Apple computer as my main computer.
You've already moved from iPhone to Android. Now you're thinking of moving from MacBook to Windows. Uh-huh. Rechot, Apple's going to give you a call. You violated some agreement.
loyalty goes two ways, eh?
Cool. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes to that laptop if anyone's interested in finding out more about the specs and what it looks like. My pick this week is Yahoo Finance, and I'm picking it mainly because Google, really are picking on Google this week, has completely screwed up its finance platform in the last few weeks. They've retuned the whole thing, and I now find it almost unusable, whereas before it was my go-to platform for checking on share price information, graphs, and all that sort of stuff. They've made a hash of it on both desktop and mobile. They've gone for a material design, which looks nice, but it's difficult to get into the information you need. It no longer seems to have the same powerful graphing tools that it used to have. So I've ditched it, and I've gone for Yahoo Finance, which is actually better than Google ever was. I create a watch list. I need to watch shares. I watch a bunch of international tech shares. I watch local tech shares and a few other companies. And you can create a fantastic – you have to sign up for a Yahoo account, but you can create a very detailed watch list all on one screen where you can see all sorts of details like the movement of the share during the day, key indicators. And, of course, you can click on it and drill down into more detail. There does seem to be a bit of a bug at the moment in South African shares, though, JSE-listed shares, in that if you look at a graph longer than 6 months, there's a problem in the graph. It doesn't display correctly. I'm sure that's going to be resolved at some point soon, but there is a bug there. But apart from that, I'm really enjoying Yahoo Finance, and I'm referring to it at least 4 or 5 times a day to see what's going on the JSE. So if you're also a former or a current Google Finance user and you're really annoyed like I am with the redesign, check out Yahoo Finance. It's pretty good. And Richard, I think that's our show.
Apart from the quiz results, of course.
Of course. Let me do the first question. According to Facebook, how many South Africans have now possibly been exposed to the data scandal involving Cambridge Analytica? And we said we'd accept to the closest 10,000 users. And the exact answer is 96121.
That's a lot of people. Second question. FNB this week launched a new mobile bank account aimed at the unbanked and underbanked. What is it called? The answer is eWallet Extra.
And Google this week said it would stop active development of which smartphone messaging app after failing to achieve the desired number of downloads, and that is Google Hello.
Fourth question. Tough new data protection rules are being introduced in the EU next month. What are the regulations called? And the answer there is General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR.
And SpaceX this week launched a new spacecraft for NASA that will search for extrasolar planets. What is the spacecraft called? And it is called TESS, or Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite. Looking forward to seeing the first results of the investigations that little machine is going to be doing.
Oh yeah.
And that's our show this week. A reminder, if you want to send us a WhatsApp voice note, we can collect them all through the week ahead of our recording on a Friday afternoon. Do send us a message. Was there anything on the show today that interests you that you want to comment on, or anything else at all in the tech world? Drop us a WhatsApp voice note to the number 071-999-1111 and do add it to your contacts on your phone for easy access in future. And that's our show, Rehat. Until next Friday, take care. Next Friday is a holiday, isn't it? We might have to record a day earlier.
I didn't know that. That's good news.
We have a mega long weekend coming up, actually. It's the Monday is not a holiday, but the Tuesday is. So I think a lot of people will be making it an extra long weekend. Mm. It's Freedom Day on Friday and Workers' Day on Tuesday. And I suspect this country is not going to be very busy on Monday.
Yeah, no, but it gives the rest of us lots of time for gaming, I think.
Or to catch up on email, in my case.
We'll catch up on sleep.
That too. From Rehat and myself, until next week. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.